You're listening to the Ideas Network. Join us tonight at 8 o'clock for live NPR coverage of the Republican National Convention. This is the last night. It's a mix of live and virtual events as Donald Trump accepts the party's nomination for president. That's tonight starting at 8 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin's attorney general has released details about Sunday night's shooting of Jacob Blake and violence that's happened in the aftermath. Last night was a fourth night of protests. A Kenosha police officer shot Jacob Blake, a black man, seven times in the back. His family says he's paralyzed and in the hospital. While headlines about police brutality and racial injustice now pointed squarely at Kenosha this week, local activists have been working for months, for years, on improving the connection between law enforcement and people of color. Isaac Wallner is a lifelong resident of Kenosha and a local organizer. He founded the Human First Project, which is an organization focused on social and racial justice. Isaac, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
What happened on Sunday when you found out Jacob Blake had been shot? What did you do?
I got a phone call from a member of a coalition I'm in saying that there was an African-American man shot in the back by police in Kenosha. And I was sleeping at the time, but I woke up, got down there on scene shortly about a half hour after the shooting. And from that point, I really just took a role to document what was going on down there. And I live streamed for about 3 hours that night. I was on the ground for about six, really just trying to show the world at that point what was going on when on the street and people's reactions to the shooting, and really give that firsthand look about what was going on down there. And after that, I took an organizing role to organize some more events and to really just kind of be there for people and help keep the peace down there and be supportive of what's going on.
Why did you realize that you needed to go, that you needed to be there on the ground and talking with people?
It's just after George Floyd, I was organizing peaceful protests, organized three peaceful protests over the course of the summer. And I just felt that it was my personal calling to go down there and use the platform I established with the protests after George Floyd's killing to take that down there and continue to be a voice of peace, because I always kept a peaceful message and it required peace at my protests. So I felt to go down there and, you know, carry that peaceful message and be down there to just help people navigate through their emotions and help just guide them through and, you know, get them out safely. And along with my coalition, we're in to help people when it comes to medical needs, or again, just to guide them through and make sure they get out of there and they're safe.
When people began to gather in that area on Sunday night, you know, you saw what they were doing, how they were connecting. What do you want people who weren't there to understand about why people crowded together?
I want people to know that although at the initial scene, there were, as the world may know, there were some destruction of police property. The world knows that an officer took a brick to the back of the head. There were some things that happened down there. But in the heat of the moment, though, overall, there's a lot of anger, but at the same time, there was still a level of peace as well. The stuff that happened after that when it comes to destruction of property, burning things down, and the killing of two individuals the other night. But at that site, after the shooting, people were angry. They wanted answers. They really didn't want to cause destruction and harm to people. They wanted answers. And upon leaving there, they gathered at the police station and demanded answers. But in the heat of the moment, there's a lot of frustration for when you see things go on around the country when it comes to what I describe open season on black people when it comes to their life and who they are and their livelihood. There's a lot of pent-up frustration when you get to watch this happen time and time again, and nothing happens to these police officers who are doing these shootings. So then when it hits home and they're essentially keeping the officer on their payroll, giving them some sort of immunity and not firing them, a lot of frustration builds from that. But even then, we move from that night, they're having very, very, very peaceful protests that disband around that curfew hour. And after that, you have people such as your militia and people who come in from the outside agitators that come into our city to cause mayhem, to cause havoc. But I want people to know, though, that Kenosha is its residents. We're a great city. We have great residents, and we have been assembling peacefully. And I want people to know that that does happen. We're not, there's protesters, there's rioters, there's a militia, and they're not all one and the same.
Isaac Wallner is a lifelong resident of Kenosha, also a local organizer. And you can join our conversation about what's happening in Kenosha by calling 800-642-1234. What is the relationship between your community and its police department? How comfortable would you feel calling officers to your neighborhood? Do you see police regularly? What's it like in your part of Wisconsin? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Isaac, I notice you mentioned we. I mean, we're talking about the fact that you've grown up in Kenosha, you live in Kenosha, and you do this work in Kenosha. How important is it to recognize that people in Kenosha are trying to stand up for injustice and in a way they think is right?
It's very important. It's very important to understand that we need equality. It's not up for debate. Like, people want to debate it. It's a must. We have to have it. This Constitution was written to give equality for everybody, not to pick and choose who can have it. And it's not to try to navigate it and make it your own to appeal to only a certain amount of people. When things like that start to happen, we're going to start to grasp for ways to have our voices be heard. And when they're not being heard, things are going to happen and escalate because we're not being heard. And so it's very important to understand that what we're out here doing, whether people agree with it or not, we're trying to be heard, and we don't agree with being treated unjustly solely based on the color of our skin. And I need people to understand that. People want to focus on the reaction. So they want to focus on the destruction and the protesting and people staying out past curfew. But they ignore the action that caused all this. They ignore the fact that an officer shot somebody in the back 7 times, and it fits the narrative. A white officer shoots a black person in the back, or shoots a black person unjustly. It fits the narrative, and it keeps happening time and time and time again. So at what point do we stop? At what point do people catch on that this is happening to us and we need their support and not their criticism and not them putting us down, but rather uplift us and join the cause with us and help get our voices out there, because we're powerful in numbers. You hear the term "we the people," and people forget, though, that the government, they work for us. We the people are powerful. If we can come together and not divide, we can make things right for everybody.
We do see that narrative playing out with Jacob Blake of a white officer and a black man being shot. And then we have people standing up for racial justice, but then we have this tension again, right? We have the protesters and we have police officers and other law enforcement working those scenes, telling people what to do, asking them to stay in line, both sides using violence at times. When you've encountered police during these protests and the crowds gathered, how do you interpret how they've interacted with demonstrators?
They, on the scene, especially that the night of the shooting, they took up a position of power to control the crowd. And I really feel that in those moments, you have to, people are angry, and rightfully so. So I really feel there needs to be some, at least one person there who is going to talk to the crowd, whether or not the crowd's going to be receptive or the crowd may answer back in anger, but somebody there to tell the, you know, the officers to, hey, take a couple steps back, you know, relax your posture, because you look aggressive, and aggression just feeds aggression. And then they put on their riot gear, and that's just they're escalating. They're not de-escalating. And I feel like de-escalation in those moments is important. And it eventually escalated to a point where violence happened. And then when you look at things over the past couple of nights, they were, when the National Guard got called in and they had a co-op between other police departments to come down to Kenosha to help control things, they were at the area of the courthouse, and eventually they came up with Bearcats, which are their heavy vehicles, armored vehicles, on a loudspeaker, instructing people to go home, saying they're in violation of the curfew, and they started using pepper rounds, which are like paintballs that shoot out a spray of pepper, and they shoot the ground around you, and they're shooting those from the roof of the courthouse and from the Bearcats at protesters. And so it does get hectic at times, but I really think that there could be other ways to de-escalate the situation.
Isaac, I'm going to jump in here. We're talking with Isaac Wallner, who's a lifelong resident of Kenosha and a local organizer. We continue talking with Isaac here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Ideas Network. Protests in Kenosha over the police shooting of Jacob Blake, a black man, have been violent. Protesters threw bottles and fireworks, police wearing riot gear and spraying tear gas, and a white 17-year-old who showed up with other armed civilians is charged with killing two people Tuesday night at the demonstration. We're looking through the news reports and getting context for the situation in Kenosha. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. You can join us by calling 800-642-1234. Do you see police officers around your neighborhood regularly? How well do you know them? Do you feel safer knowing officers are nearby? 800-642-1234. Kenosha is Isaac Wallner's hometown. Isaac founded the Human First Project, which is an organization focused on social and racial justice. Isaac, lots of people are looking at Kenosha right now, but these conversations have been going on long before Sunday. What was the relationship like between the community and Kenosha police before this shooting?
There has been tension between the community and the Kenosha police before the shooting, and there has been a disconnect between the African-American population, you know, in the population that is poverty-stricken, those neighborhoods such as them over-policing the neighborhoods. And but then when something happens, such as a shooting, they come in there, they do their job, and they disappear instead of, you know, really being there to support the neighborhood and uplift it and try to make it better. They're more there just to police it and to almost, in a sense, bully the neighborhood and be overpowering to just show power, not show support. And so I really feel that disconnect and that overuse of power is what burnt that bridge, is what keeps that bridge separated. And I refer to community policing, where they could be out there as a community, as a service more than it is as a power, and be there to, you know, try to bridge that gap and show their faces, maybe walk a beat like they did back in the day, so kids can see them as friendly and as polite and not fear the police officers.
We've got Don in Fish Creek who has a question here this morning. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, and thank you for the show, and thank you to your guest, Isaac, I think. Anyway, I'm about as far away from a city as you can get. I'm up in northeast Wisconsin, but I can't wonder about the failure of our state legislature on a number of issues, from even, you know, rejecting Governor Evers' calls for even mild gun control, which could be applied to some of these vigilante-type white supremacists. I wrote a letter to my state assemblyman, Joel Kitchens, Republican of Sturgeon Bay, who several years ago introduced the Blue Lives Matter legislation, and I wrote a couple letters to the editor, decrying that. It's like, you know, it originated as a white supremacist response to Black Lives Matter movement in, I think, Louisiana or Alabama, and then it was picked up around the country. And this kind of neglect from our state legislatures on a number of levels, from poverty, which your guest, as the root cause of a lot of the trouble right now, from the pandemic to anything, our state legislative majority doing nothing.
Yeah. Don, let's talk with Isaac about it. Thanks for that point. And Isaac, Don brings up this idea of state legislation, and you're working in your community. I mean, are there things that we need to do at the state level? Does this have to happen organically, locally? How do we solve for some of these challenges?
You have to clean up these neighborhoods, give these neighborhoods that are poverty stricken some hope. They're coming into the city and they're trying to revamp the downtown, spending all this money to give us a better downtown, and talks about putting in high rises and shops and all these things for the downtown. But what about investing into your community and cleaning things up, giving us better schools, cleaning the schools up, putting in parks and neighborhoods that are in walking distance for kids to go to and enjoy themselves and have a good time, instead of investing money into a downtown and putting in jobs that don't even pay enough for a person to work there, a full-time job, and be able to afford their livelihood. But yet, at the end of the day, it's a business, and you're making somebody rich off of that business, but yet the employees there still can't afford to live. So you're putting in more businesses that aren't paying a livable wage, and you get these people from these neighborhoods that are working them, but still can't afford to even hardly even shop or enjoy what that business is. So to me, there should be this on the state side of things, create whether it's funding for projects to clean up the neighborhoods and, give these neighborhoods hope, and put up, housing for the homeless population, and be able to, there shouldn't be people sleeping on the street in our city.
Isaac,
when you think of, go ahead.
I was just going to mention that Isaac Wallner is a lifelong resident of Kenosha, also founded the Human First Project, which is an organization focused on social and racial justice. And Isaac, you are organizing a community-wide candlelight vigil and prayer for Jacob Blake, who has had surgery, is reportedly paralyzed after police shot him on Sunday. Why is this the next step? Why is this event so important?
I feel it's important to gather everybody in a very peaceful manner and to support Jacob Blake and his family, and to show us that we are Kenosha strong and we can gather peacefully, and that we are able to do this in a unified way that A, the world can see, because that we've been seeing on the news, chaos, the city burning down, the loss of life, and be able to show Kenosha standing together in a peaceful manner to stand up in solidarity for Jacob Blake and his family, I feel is very important.
What are you and other members of the Kenosha Accountability Coalition that was formed after the death of George Floyd, What are you doing now? Now that this has happened, this has escalated so much in your hometown, what are you going to do to try to have more conversations with police or with community members? Have you figured out where to start?
We're meeting to figure out a list of things that we feel from community input will help to better the community, and then taking that and eventually running that up into like state legislation and as well as local elected officials, and trying to find a way to make this community safer and better for all. And it's really just coming together, and we have to build we have traction with what we've been doing, but now it's time to mobilize and build a list of demands, if you will, and things we want to see change policy-wise. And that's what we're doing right now.
Do you think local leaders, state leaders, will take you seriously?
We're strong in numbers, and we've been on the ground. They've seen that. They know that. And I feel like when we approach them with actually being out there and having support from the community, I really do feel they will, because we all have support. We're backed by the community. We've been out here since George Floyd, and we haven't stopped. And we've been consistent. The momentum has kept going, and the momentum will keep going. And if they don't listen the first time around, we're here to stay, and we're not going to stop.
Isaac Wallner, thank you for talking to us about what you're doing in your hometown. We appreciate your time.
Welcome. Thank you.
Isaac Wallner is a lifelong resident of Kenosha. He's also a local organizer who founded the Human First Project. It's an organization focused on social and racial justice. Just ahead, we've got an author exploring girlhood, including her personal struggles with gender and identity. It's about a book called Tomboy Land, and she grew up right here in Wisconsin. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.